Hello, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Candace LePage.
Candace, I feel like we should go on an adventure. Like, maybe into the bowels of the internet for...
Into the dark web.
The dark web, where, you know, seedy slugs are selling viruses for a price.
Yeah.
I think that sounds like us.
Yep.
Okay, cool. That's what we're going to do after the show. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new animated buddy comedy, Ralph Breaks the Internet. That's in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the recent news items for the past week, including one, Bill Maher, the comedian, made some comments about the passing of Stan Lee that caused a wee bit of controversy. And we'll talk about if there really is any. And then author Rick Riordan, he didn't like the adaptation of his Percy Jackson books or the struggles to make them, but does that really matter? And then finally, we'll talk about some of the recently released trailers for some major new projects, including The Lego Movie 2, Once Upon a Deadpool, and Aquaman. But first, The Hollywood Reporter conducted a poll for some reason, and it was asking movie fans about what new entries into various sequels and franchises that they might like to see. And the number one winner was none other than Back to the Future, which ended almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Very conclusively. 71% of the people who answered said they wanted to see a new Back to the Future movie. And I guess they just asked people to rank them, because if you took all the numbers, they don't add up to 100. 69% of people ranked another Toy Story, which is actually coming out next year.
Yeah, did you know?
I think I might have heard something about
it.
It was pretty evident from watching Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yeah, tell me about it.
The two trailers.
I've never seen two trailers for the same movie before another movie.
Well, Disney needs to raise awareness about Toy Story, because how many people know about Toy Story 4?
Well, I do now. So.
There you go. 68% of people said Indiana Jones, which there is another Indiana Jones coming, or at least they're planning on another Indiana Jones. 67% said Jurassic Park, although I haven't... Jurassic Park or
like
Jurassic
there was
World,
just another new
was.
One 3 months ago or something.
Yeah, and I haven't heard about them making Jurassic World 3. Like, there hasn't been like an official announcement, like they've green-lighted it or something.
Green-lit it?
This is the trouble with the English language.
These fake words they make up.
These Hollywood words. These $10 Hollywood words. Star Wars was at 63%. Of course, there is another Star Wars coming out next Christmas. Avengers, 57%. There's another Avengers coming out in the summer. Hunger Games, a series that ended conclusively, at 55%. The Matrix had 54%. And
there was no conclusive ending to The Matrix, by the way.
I agree to disagree, but Avatar at 53%. There's like five Avatars coming at some point in the not too distant future.
There's been five Avatars coming for 10
Since,
years.
No, I agree. But like James Cameron shooting stuff on what, like shooting like social media messages on what looks like a set, and he's been talking about how he's been shooting them for like a year. So I think they are coming. But I said before,
so is Winter.
Oh, Winter.
Boom.
Winter is here. I found the wording of this in particular, which was, if a new movie in the series were to be released, would you watch it? And so I guess basically people got this list and said, you know, if I knew Back to the Future, even though...
So I am a data nerd, so I clicked through to the, as Slashfilm calls it, the entire depressing survey here. So I clicked through, and Back to the Future, it was a leading question. So the question ahead of it was, have you seen any of the movies in this series? Mm-hmm. And it was like, yes, I've seen them all. Yes, I've seen some. No, I haven't seen any.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, and so that listed like, I don't know, 15 or 20 movies. And then right after that, the question was, how do you feel about these series?
Mm-hmm.
Very favorable, somewhat favorable, et cetera, et cetera. So four things. And so Back to the Future, of course, was pretty high on the like very favorable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next question was, if a new movie in these series So people were primed, like very primed already, to say, yeah, of course I'd love more Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a weird choice to have that particular one there with all of these other rather current movies, with almost all of them already having new movies in the series having come out in the last year or coming out in the next 3 years. So I don't know if that means that Back to the Future has something going on. Who knows? This was a Hollywood Reporter survey. What I did find way more interesting than this Back to the Future business, because by the way, of course people would watch a new Back to the Future in the series. Would they watch a remake of it or a reboot with new act? Who knows? That's I feel like that's a totally different question, which is what Slash Film was trying to say. Oh my God, nobody wants more reboots and people are all wanting a Back to the Future reboot. I'm like, that wasn't the question.
No.
But after those questions, there was a series of questions about the James Bond franchise. Every single, like, how do you feel about this movie, that movie, who's the best Bond? And then there were these four questions, which was, how do you feel about a black James Bond? How do you feel about an Asian James Bond? How do you feel about a female James Bond? And how do you feel about a gay James Bond?
Mm-hmm.
People were pretty favorable about a black James Bond, I think because everybody's been talking about it. The other three were just like, I have no interest in seeing that. No one wants to see an Asian, gay, female James Bond.
Yeah, that was interesting. I especially noted the 52% of people who supported the idea of a black James Bond, but 63% of people were in favor of Idris Elba playing James Bond. Yeah. And I think it was the Heat Vision blog on Hollywood Reporter that said, like, 90% of people are deeply confused because they don't know that Idris Elba is a black man. That was interesting. That people seem to be more unfavorable to, I guess maybe it's invocative of the tiny steps that society takes. But
and I think it's because we have been talking so much about Idris Elba's James Bond and or any black actor. And so it just goes to show that the more we talk about things, the more they become part of our social mores, more people are accepting of it. So let's start talking about a gay James Bond.
You know what's funny is, like, when I was reading that and I was reading about Asian James Bond, I immediately thought of Henry Golding from Crazy Rich Asians, because I mean, he's got the build. If you saw the shirtless scenes in Crazy Rich Asians, he's healthy. He's a healthy man. But also, you know, when you think about the James Bonds, you have Daniel Craig, who a lot of people have compared to Sean Connery in that cold-blooded, you know, rough sort of rough edges assassin kind of way. And, you know, Henry Golding might make, like, the nice Roger Moore follow-up.
Oh, see, I was feeling more of a Brosnan.
Well, just Brosnan was in... Right, Brosnan very was in the hair. In the Roger Moore mold, too.
I guess so,
So, but, yeah. Okay. But so, I found interesting.
I brought Back to the Future to James Bond. I'm sorry.
No, it just... I've always thought... It's a bit, like, even the idea of remaking, and Robert Zemeckis has said, like, pretty much, like, from my cold dead hand about remaking Back to the Future. But I'm like, what would that look like today if it was, like, set in, if it's 2018 Marty McFly and he goes back to 1988?
Yeah, so I feel like there's no reason for it because it is a story about time travel. So when it was made in the 80s, it was already... talking about the 50s, so there's no, like, technical or, like, all these there's very few things that need to change to modernize it because it wasn't modern. That was the whole point. And then, of course, going, like, way back to the Old West and into the kind of future, so
an alternate 2015.
Yeah, so none of the stories that are there need to be modernized. And I think, even, you know, as far as special effects go, it's fine. Like, there's nothing they really underused special effects, so it's fine. You don't need to do that. But the other side too, being that right now, if we talk about going back 30 years and doing it, you know, a new Back to the Future now, where someone now goes into the 80s, I'm like, that is every movie and TV show now.
Yeah,
everything is just awash with 80s nostalgia.
Yeah,
and people are loving it still, but we're going to quickly get very tired of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that the further we go forward, bless, like, kids might be surprised about what their parents are like because of now, like, home video cameras.
Yeah.
And then as we go forward into, like, social media and all that stuff. So, you know, the more it goes along, that's part of the charm of it, is that when Marty McFly goes back in time and sees that his father's a peeping Tom and you know, like, this guy who was, like, bullied and his mother was highly sexual as a teen girl.
That was a very diplomatic use of words.
Yes. But that's part of the surprise. I think in the future it's going to be less surprising for the kids when, you know, looking backwards at their parents. And I was also thinking about the gag of, like, the time machine itself, because you know, what would be the equivalent now?
It's like a hot tub. By the way, Back to the Future has been remade already as Hot Tub Time Machine.
That's actually a good point. And yeah, because what would Marty McFly take back in time? A Prius? A Tesla? It doesn't really quite work the same, right, as the DeLorean, which was this stupid, like, if it wasn't for Back to the Future, like, the DeLorean
was dead on arrival, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be like the Yugo now. It would just be like, like, you're driving that instead of, cool, you have a DeLorean, so.
Yeah.
Anyway,
have to talk about this.
Yes, we have to talk about it, because I was by myself when Stanley died. Well, I wasn't when Stanley died, but since I only was able to address it briefly, this was a gateway to allow me to talk about it with someone else. But Bill Maher, who hosts the show on HBO called Real Time, was talking about the death of Stan Lee, and basically said that in a country that, you know, invests so much in comic books as legitimate literature, that only a country like this could elect somebody like Donald Trump, which my immediate impression was, like, that's almost the same. And I'm someone who likes Bill Maher, but my immediate impression of that was, like, that's like these people who argue that comic books and video games and Marilyn Manson create school shooters on the other end of the extreme. Because, you know, if you want to talk about a country that loves comic books, go to Japan. And there's no Donald Trump in running Japan
and,
right now.
I mean, if Bill Maher wants to say that, I would actually argue the problem is the number of people who don't read comic books. They're the ones who voted for Donald Trump. They're the ones who have zero social, like, criticism. Mm. They're the ones who have never looked at their life through the lens of something outside of their own lives. Those are the people, the ones who don't read comic books. Those are the ones who elected Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And Bill Maher.
Nobody elected Bill Maher.
And he didn't elect Donald Trump, but I would argue that his brand of I am an angry leftist, which he's just not, is part of the big divide. It pushes the divide along a lot.
I can see that, but I also think that there are a lot of people who aren't angry enough that, you know, people like Donald Trump are in charge. That a lot of people sort of take it in stride. And there are genuine times I was watching CNN this morning, and Rick Santorum was, like, talking about this climate. We're getting into politics here, but he was talking about this climate change report that dropped on Black Friday purposely so that no one would pay attention to it. And he's like, oh, it's this liberal dodge, they're making money off it. And immediately thought about this, that Krusty the Clown line where it's like, everywhere I go, I see teachers driving Ferraris and research scientists drinking champagne. Yeah. It's like, that's the kind of idiocy that just makes my blood boil. But I think that's the type of idiocy that Trump emboldens or sanctifies.
Bringing it back to Bill Maher, though.
Yeah, bring it back.
I think Bill Maher, I used to like him, I don't know, 25 years ago. 25 years ago, I thought that he actually brought intelligent commentary to the discussion. I am realizing now, I don't know if it's his old age is making him, I don't know what it is, but he is very set in his ways.
Yeah,
totally,
like a lot of old people.
Totally not open
to
any other experience other than his. I'm so offended. I really, really am by what he said, because he is wrong, and he is proving how much he has no intellectual interest in expanding his worldview, which makes him no different than Donald Trump. Maher.
That's a good point. I think what sort of sad me is that he, not really saddened, but, you know, he also doubled down on it. It's like, the reaction proves my point. It's like, well, no, but it's, I think like you said, there are a lot of people who grew up with like learning basic morality from Spider-Man and from superheroes. We learned, you know, understanding and acceptance from the X-Men.
And yeah, well, and that's the thing, right? DC was very a lot more black and white and very truth, justice in the American way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing, right? You look at a character like Superman, the Boy Scout, he is just good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for people to read that and to understand and to actually see like a real hero who just does good, because we don't see that in the real world. And then you're right, on the Marvel side, it is so much more about how is the everyday person really a hero? What everyday circumstances do people go through that lead them to making change in the world around them?
Mm-hmm.
These are huge, like huge things for people to learn. It's, yeah.
And yeah, and it also, like, well, Spider-Man especially was, like, one of the great things about Spider-Man was that even when he wins, he loses. Like, you know, he has this date with Gwen Stacy, but he has to ditch because he has to go save the city from Dr. Octopus or something. And, you know, it teaches you, you know, responsibility. Now, sometimes you have to put the right thing before your own thing. And that's the first initial lesson of Spider-Man is that, you know, his Uncle Ben dies because of his inaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, maybe to put a period on this, that I was reading one article and they're making the point that, you know, a lot of stuff in the beginning is not considered, you know, like high intellectual, high literature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, John Steinbeck is an example. Even William Shakespeare is an example. People forget Shakespeare wasn't the playwright of the hoi polloi. He was a working class playwright writing plays for the everyday folk.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, the snooty Stratford Festival crowd kind of thing. So, you know, that kind of thing changed. And who knows what might happen in the future. And the only other thing I'll add, and I've been thinking about this in the last week, is that Stan Lee is one of these writers who has such a huge influence, but I wonder how many people have actually read a Stan Lee written comic book. Because, you know, back in the 60s, he would, like, work on a book for, like, a year, 2 years, and then hand it off. And his longest runs were on, like, the first 100 issues of Amazing Spider-Man and the first 100, I want to say 25, of Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's more, like, a bit of a world builder and creator with the help of teams.
Yes.
yeah, like, and I would agree. Like, most of my comic book reading, I don't believe I've ever read anything by him.
Mm-hmm.
Just the characters that he created.
Yeah. Speaking of characters people created and then lose control of, Rick Riordan, who wrote the Percy Jackson books. There were 5 Percy Jackson books in all, only 2 movies, but he posted on his blog about his experiences making Percy Jackson. I didn't realize the Percy Jackson book was like his first book. That, you know, it came out of like talking to his son about like Greek myths and heroes and all that. And then he created this very successful YA fiction series that ended up becoming a movie, and it was directed by no less than Chris Columbus, who also launched the Harry Potter franchise.
And the Home Alone franchise.
And the Home Alone franchise. Yeah, there's like maybe 5 or 6 Home Alone.
And Alones, the Gremlins franchise.
Fair enough. But, you know, so it's, you know, a pretty great experience for a first-time author, but, you know, he shared his thoughts about them adapting the material and them sort of losing the thread of what made Percy Jackson unique, and him kind of, you know, they aged up the characters, which he didn't like, and he worried about them sort of sacrificing the future of the franchise to sort of make it more marketable, and it turned out he was right in the end. But I do wonder, like, because on the one hand you have people like Rick Riordan who sort of turn over their works and maybe they get a say like he did, or just to complained via email by reading the script in advance, or somebody like J.K. Rowling, who gets complete creative control.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, and given some of the things people have said about Fantastic Beasts, that series, it's, you know, which one is sort of better?
Well, and I mean, I think it has a lot to do with where a person is in their journey of sort of ownership of the, and I don't know, so I will admit that I have never read any of the Percy Jackson books, and I haven't seen the films.
I've seen the first film.
I do know some young people who are crazy for the book series. And it sounds quite interesting, and it's sort of been on my to read list, which is large. But you know, it's sort of one of those things that's like, I mean, I get it. I understand his point, and maybe he was right in his opinions, but unfortunately his opinions don't matter. And I don't know if that was because he was just so eager that he struck a poor deal, or he was just, he needed money. They never offered him a better deal. I don't know. I don't know why it was that he wasn't given any sort of creative control, whereas Rowling was. But I mean, not that I want to discount his feelings about it, but it's just like, well, welcome to the club. You know,
right.
There are very few authors who are happy with the movie versions of their books, because it's really difficult. They're totally different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, I was not happy with the Ready Player One movie. However,
a lot of people weren't.
Well, and this is the thing. So, however, the author actually was, even though it did what Rick Riordan, what he felt also happened. It basically, I mean, the Ready Player One movie basically did the same thing, just totally threw out much of the book and created something else entirely different, which those of us who read the book, that was we were unhappy about that. But the author was like, no, I get it. Like, I wrote this for these people and in this world, and that is just not going to work on the big screen.
Mm.
What's interesting to me is that Christopher Columbus, I don't know how much Christopher Columbus had to do with the script writing and the casting and all that sort of stuff, but I definitely remember when Harry Potter, because he directed the first two movies,
mm-hmm.
and he said at the time, you need to recast these actors, because we're doing this at like from 11 to 17.
Yeah.
And actors are going to age at least in double time, because it's going to take us a couple of years to make every movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be recasting this. And so I wonder here if he sort of looked at it with a very similar sort of lens and went, okay, they're not going to recast it, obviously. That's not what happened here. So let's just start with older actors who you won't notice their age difference if the movies come out once every 2 years.
Mm. Could be. Yeah, I think it's somewhat naive to expect like everyone to get the J.K. Rowling treatment, especially as an author. And I mean, you talk to Stephen King about, you know, adaptations mm-hmm. of, like, he hates the Kubrick Shining. A lot of people mm-hmm. love the Kubrick Shining.
It's great.
It is great.
So
no,
good.
No, it is great. But you know, I think I remember talking to somebody about like the Harry Potter adaptations, and he's like, I wish someone would just make a good movie of the good version of the Harry Potter books. And it's like, okay, well, you know, what's your good version? He's like, well, the book is the script. It's like, well, no, the book can't be the script, because the book is a book and a script is a script.
The movie would have to be very, very long.
And
lots of narration.
Right, and I take this I've talked about this a couple of times, but one of his beefs was like Hagrid's cabin is in the wrong place in the movie layout. And it's like, I don't know that. How do you know that?
That does not affect the story.
No, it doesn't, right? But, you know, and I think one of the things I've often wondered about is, can an author writing a book be like, have any kind of impartiality when that book is being adapted to a different medium, whether that's like a movie, whether that's a TV show? It makes me curious, like, how maybe these Game of Thrones prequels are going to work out
mm-hmm.
on HBO, with George R.R. Martin having a more direct involvement versus what he had in the main Game of Thrones series. Because a lot of the stuff, you know, there are big differences between the book and the TV show. A lot of characters who are recombinant or just taken out entirely. You know, can you as an author take that step back?
Mm-hmm.
And I think watching the Fantastic Beasts movies unfold and watching sort of J.K. Rowling making unusual mistakes, considering how well executed the book series of Harry Potter was, mm-hmm. what, you know, and trying to replicate that by creating a movie only series,
yeah,
is maybe proof of that. I don't know. We'll see. We're going to wrap up the news segment by talking about some trailers. So trailers that were just released this week, including Lego 2, the second part, Deadpool 2. You see the trailer says Once Upon a Deadpool. What it is advertising is a PG-13 version mm-hmm. of Deadpool 2 with a framing device of the Princess Bride with Deadpool reading Fred Savage a story. And then the final trailer for Aquaman, which comes out next month. Which one of these got you the most excited?
Well, I'll give you one guess.
Okay. Deadpool.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what's funny is that I actually haven't seen Deadpool 2 yet.
Oh, really?
I wanted to see it in the theater. For whatever reason, I missed it. And then it's just, you know, I don't know. There's something about seeing it at home alone that just never quite feels the same.
Yeah.
But yes, the trailer was hilarious. I was watching it this morning in a cafe going, this was a poor choice to watch this in public with my headphones on. Yeah. Okay, I can handle this.
Yeah.
Can I talk about how much I love Kevin Arnold?
Sure.
AKA
Fred Savage.
Yes. I liked him as a child actor, but I love what he is doing now as an adult actor. It is great. Starting with The Grinder a couple of years ago, and then I haven't watched too much of The Friends Like Us because it's hit or miss, but just the fact that he's part of the, he's so funny, and I'm so glad to see him doing stuff. And the trailer, I could just rewatch the trailer a few times. I'm like, do you know what? Let's remake The Princess Bride
with Deadpool and Fred Savage.
Deadpool, yes. Let's just do that. I want to see that movie.
I did like that. I like the part where he says, you know, I like Marvel movies, and Deadpool says, well, this is a Marvel movie. It's like, yeah, but it's like if Nickelback produced the Beatles.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, that was funny. I have extraordinary ambivalence about Lego 2, even though the trailer used Intergalactic, which is, I think, an underappreciated Beastie Boys song.
Is it underappreciated? I don't know.
I like it a lot, so I think it's underappreciated.
I just felt like it came on, and I was like, oh, we're going to use Beastie Boys to harken back to Star Trek trailers all the time now, aren't we?
Maybe. But there's a part where Emmett, the character voiced by Chris Pratt from the first movie, meets like the Chris Pratt Lego. Where he's like, I'm a space cowboy, raptor wrangler, and it's like
archaeologist.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, okay, so you're Chris Pratt. That's all. But I hate to say it, but I'm getting more and more excited about seeing Aquaman.
You got to carry all the excitement in this room because I have zero. What is less than zero? A Rob Lowe film. Sorry.
Jeez. That's
tangent.
That's a deep cut.
Tangent. I have less than zero interest in seeing Aquaman.
You know, I like the colors in it. I like the brightness. It seems like an antithesis to everything that the DC movies have done so far, you know, up to and including Wonder Woman.
These are some weak arguments. I like the colors.
There's a lightness to it. It's colorful. I think Jason Momoa is an interesting choice to play Aquaman. I know a lot of people get annoyed by like the Aqua Bro kind of style.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because like me and Jason Momoa have no familiarity whatsoever.
You have no Momoa-menton?
Yeah,
no.
whatever those women who love Momoa call themselves, I am not one of them.
Okay, fair enough. But I like that, like, Nicole Kidman was, like, doing some kicks and doing some fighting in the trailer, which...
Oh, was she in it?
Yeah, she's the Aqua Mom.
The Mom? Okay.
The Aqua Mom.
It was really small.
I came up with that term too, Aquamom.
Aquamom?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think she's ever done action. I can't remember. I've been trying to think. It's like what's an action Nicole Kidman?
Well, she danced in Moulin Rouge and did some, you know, she was up on a trapeze.
All right. Well, that counts. But I mean, okay, when has she done like an impact kick, like a roundhouse
I
kick,
don't think
like Jean-Claude Van Damme style?
Maybe in Dead Calm, her first movie, which was great.
Oh, I love Dead Calm.
It's so good.
She's so good in that.
She went downhill real fast for a while and then came back.
Are you referencing her first marriage?
Well, to begin with, yeah. And all of the terrible movies that resulted from that marriage.
Yeah.
Are you going to say Days of Thunder is okay?
No, I was going to say To Die For is really good.
Oh, I never watched that one.
Well, you should, because she's really good in that. That was sort of like, I think that was the beginning of the end when she started to assert some Cruisian independence. And I think that's... I think it all went downhill from To Die. But To Die For is To Die For.
Okay.
And I will stand by that. All right. So we're going to take a break here and then come back and talk about Ralph Breaks the Internet. Before that, I just want to say thanks to everyone who donated to Raise Your Voice and contributed a few bucks to help keep the mobile studio going. And I'll also do a little cross promotion for someone who works at the station, Jenny Mitchell. Her Gone Guelph shirts are back. And I know that a lot of people...
Three-star cinema shirt.
I was going to get to that specifically because we have that on one of our pictures on our Facebook page, the old three-star RIPD for the three-star cinema. So, yeah, if you go to Facebook, find Gone Guelph, just search Gone Guelph. You'll find Jenny Mitchell's shirts, and you can order any one of them. They are available now. And thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting the studio, and thanks for supporting our friends and the people who work here, and... just a great time of year to
give.
To give. Be a giver. Give a three-star cinema shirt for Christmas. So, Ralph Breaks the Internet is, our review is next. And to cue that up, if you stay to the very end of Ralph Breaks the Internet, you'll appreciate this. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Von Schweetz of the Sugar Rush Von Schweetzes. I'm sure you've heard of us. So it'd be embarrassing for you if you haven't.
What kind of a princess are you?
What kind?
Do you have magic hair?
No.
Magic hands?
No.
Do animals talk to you?
No.
Were you poisoned?
No.
Cursed?
No.
Kidnapped or enslaved?
No. Are you guys okay? Should I call the police?
Then I have to assume you made a deal with an underwater sea witch where she took your voice in exchange for a pair of human legs?
No. Good Lord, who would do that?
Have you ever had true love's kiss?
Ew, barf.
Do you have daddy issues?
I don't even have a mom.
Neither do we.
And now for the million-dollar question. Do people assume all your problems got solved because a big, strong man showed up?
Yes! What is up with that?
She is a princess!
I can't believe you have given away the two best parts of the movie.
I think that was in the trailer.
I know, but maybe I didn't watch the trailer. I don't know.
Well, lesson learned. That was a clip from Ralph Breaks the Internet, the new film from Phil Johnson and Rich Moore. It features the voice talents of John C. Reilly, Sarah Silverman, Jack McBryer, Jane Lynch, Gal Gadot, Alan Tudyk, and Taraji P. Henson.
And Jodie Benson.
And Jodie Benson.
And a number of other Disney princesses.
But yeah.
I was really excited to hear Ariel.
Yeah, so let's start with that portion, because I'm not sure how to... feel about, like, it was funny and all that, but like, what is Disney trying to say here? It's like, we treat women bad.
I think they're saying we get it.
Okay.
We have a long history of this, and they're trying to change, right? Like Brave, and then some might say Mulan before Brave, but, you know, and then the, what was it called? The Princess and the Frog.
Right.
So they are, it's hard to move a cruise ship the size of Disney. It takes some time. And I think that they're working on it. And I think that they can work on it better mm-hmm. in things outside of their flagship princess movies.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of feel like we recognize this problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it might have landed better if the preceding 10 minutes hadn't been a journey through corporate marketing, because Princess Vanellope rolls up into the Disneyland website.
OhMyDisney.com.
OhMyDisney.com, which pretty much equates Disney to godliness. So cool. But you know, she's running away from stormtroopers when she accidentally finds the princesses.
The sound design was so great. I love so. Let me be frank.
All right.
You be Shirley.
All right.
I went into this movie. I have not seen the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I think I sort of watched a trailer or bits of this, you know, going in. So I kind of knew what I was going into, but I was like, whatever, I know it's going to be good. I'm going to enjoy it. Of course, I've heard about all this, oh yeah, and they recreate all the Disney princesses. It's amazing. And I was like, I'm sure it's not going to be amazing. And then from the second she arrived at the Disney website, and I was just like, I can't believe how much I am loving this entire part of this.
Yeah.
And it is. You're right. It's just like this corp. It's just, yes. I it's all Disney all the time. But I loved it. And I loved all of the voice actors they got. I mean, Anthony Daniels is C-3PO. Every living actress who's actually played one of the princesses, every single one of them came back to do the voice. And then they had a couple of Cinderella and Snow White obviously had to be hired someone else. But I just loved it. And, you know, part of it, even right from the very beginning, and I think part of it is because I just don't watch as many Disney kids movies as much, but right from the very beginning with the Disney production thing, you know, with the Once Upon a Star, I'm just like, I hear that music and I remember being 10 on Saturday nights at 5 when the Wonderful World of Disney came on, and it's just like, I don't know. Maybe I've reached that age where I'm just always nostalgic for my childhood. But I was just like, I hope they mm-hmm. never change that mm-hmm. song.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things about Disney have changed. I hope they never stop using When You Wish Upon a Star as their opening sort of song.
Okay, got it. You're part of the problem.
Yes, yes. Apparently I am. I didn't know I was, but apparently I am.
You know, it's... I get it, but it just, you know, it feels so blatant at this point because Disney has just sort of absorbed
everything
when you're thinking about
it. They are the blob.
Yeah.
Watch out, Kevin Dillon. Sorry, I'm just full of tangents today.
It's all right. But yeah, she's running around, there's Star Wars and there's Iron Man and there's Buzz Lightyear and it's, you know, I guess, you know, coming soon, whatever, you know, Fox, maybe they'll run into the Von Trapp family at some point in a future Disney movie. The movie, I think, sort of stands on its own without, and I think that princess's scene could have worked if she was without the 10-minute Disney commercial in front of it. It just, there's something interesting about it, but gross. But,
sure.
But ultimately, it's kind of a small part of this movie, which I found very enjoyable in its own right.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it as well. It was nicely done. It was a good message.
Yeah.
Heartwarming.
Okay, the message is, because I like the message that friendships change.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sort of let them change, and if you sort of drift apart from someone, that's okay, because who knows what, you know, tomorrow will bring, as long as, you know, you appreciate that person for who they are, not necessarily what they represent in your life. And, you know, if you love someone, set them free, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. That was really, I found very positive and life-affirming. And I think from some of the comments I was reading online, a lot of people really took that message to heart or were going through things where that message resonated. The other part, though, where Vanellope finds fulfillment in Twisted Metal...
I have zero problem with that.
Okay.
You know what? She's She's just, I mean, she doesn't want to move. She doesn't want to become a different person. She just wants to be a better version of the person that she is. She wants to have challenges, right?
Sure.
She's just sitting there doing the exact same thing every day. Nothing challenges her. She is not growing. She doesn't want to become different. She just wants to grow in the same place, in the same vein.
Right. I think my feeling is this would be like me watching Mad Max and thinking, boy, that looks like a great place to live. Like, just in a world where, you know, water is scarce and you have to worry about, like, roving gangs of people and, like, murderous go-karts and, you know,
the difference
struggling
is
to survive.
Vanellope knows that she doesn't live there and that there's a world outside of that. It's
okay.
It's different.
Okay, I just like the slaughter race game.
It's, you know, when I go to my cottage, which has no running water, no indoor plumbing, no heat, no power, right? Maybe that's not the way I want to live all the time, but it is the way that I'd like to go to relax, to get away from things, and then I can come back to the world where there are, you know, refrigerated foods and running water.
I think that's a generous comparison, but versus a world where, yeah.
Slaughter Race looked like a pretty darn good game, and it just made me really want to go home and play Blur and just drive and shoot things.
What kind of place has great white sharks in the sewer? That's what I want to know.
It's a little weird. Yes. New York City?
It's a little weird. That's alligators.
Oh, was it in Sydney, Australia that had the mall that flooded and had the sharks in it? It was a movie.
Was it?
It was an Australian movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought this was some stupid thing on the Sci-Fi Channel. you just never know. That game sort of really understands sort of like the base silliness of some of the games, mm-hmm. like, you know, like Twisted Metal or like Grand Theft Auto, or, you know, where it's just like, here's all these people in this like falling apart world and fighting over a car, and they're wearing clown makeup for some reason.
Yes.
There's this guy walking around with a blowtorch, with a flamethrower for mm-hmm. some reason. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a quality to that too. A lot of like, I'd like to say that the animators did a lot of research surfing the internet, but they probably do that anyway. I did like what somebody online said, that they're waiting to see the big Pornhub building.
Yeah, I think this, I mean, is it sort of in the dark web? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Can we talk about this like virusy thing? First of all, the actual virus that was released was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Like, well done with that. I was like, ooh, that thing looks scary.
Scanning for insecurity.
Yes, there's definitely a scary thing in the web right now.
Yeah, that was, I mean, a lot of that stuff was... I like the animation in this movie a lot, because I like how the characters sort of remind you of the voice actors playing them. Like, there's some John C. Reilly and Ralph. There's some Sarah Silverman and Vanellope. Even like the new character in the Slaughterhouse Race, the Gal Gadot character. Yeah. You know, Gal Gadot has a fairly unique voice, so when you hear it, but you know, also the look of the character, it's like, oh, it's Gal Gadot.
Yeah, well, and in a way, even Alan Tudyk.
Yeah,
I mean, the
he did look like the robot in iRobot.
Yeah, the character didn't look anything like Alan Tudyk, but at the same time, it was sort of like, it was just immediate, and it was like, of course, of course, that's Alan Tudyk, and that's what he looks like. Yeah.
And Nosemore.
He does know.
And that was one of the things I liked, with the, you go up to Nosemore and who's the search bar, and he tries to autofill the rest. That was a lot of fun. I like the e-boy.
E-boy. There really is an e-boy.
Yeah. From eBay who pops up and reminds you.
Yes, all the pop-ups were pretty great.
Spamly, who has like this like 1930s like shyster voice, and I think Bill Hader was him. It's like, and how he goes back to his office and it's just like a piece of crap office. And he's like, oh, I think I got something else somewhere for you. And the little gourd guy,
just a little virus,
yeah,
a little worm,
yeah. So, you know, all those little details are great. That I do wonder, though, and I read some, you know, again, I was looking at comments about the movie and people pointing this out, like, how does this movie age? Like, how much of this is, you know, in 3 years going
to
be?
So, to be fair, I did find, I'm like, okay, so they've gone into the internet. And I'm like, you know what? This version of being inside the internet is way better than anything hackers or like the Matrix, any of these other things.
The net.
All of these things where people are trying to visualize the internet.
Right.
Terrible. This, at least, I'm like, I think they've already done so much better than all these other movies. And I think that in a way it will age better for that because they, you know, have made it sort of a fun animated kind of thing. I mean, it's hard to say, right? Like eBay, I mean, it already feels like, and maybe it's just a lot, eBay's bigger in the States than it is in Canada. But to me, eBay already felt dated. The fact that they were, I'm like, really? Are there that many people going to eBay? And then the fact that
you can resell stuff on Amazon too.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in Canada, so Kijiji is the thing.
Kijiji, yeah.
Yeah. But, and then I think it was smart that they sort of made up a different video site. Like, they didn't try to use.
Right.
Right. It's like BuzzFeed and YouTube together. BuzzTube.
I wonder if this, because I did see the YouTube logo in, like, the Internet
the
City.
The Google logo was there, and Google,
yeah,
like,
Yeah, Google owns YouTube, yeah. So I wonder if, because that was rather explicitly BuzzFeed, you know, it's like, we don't care what you post as long as people love it or sharing it. And I wonder if BuzzFeed was like, oh, we don't like this depiction of us.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. BuzzFeed has just decided to get rid of all their podcasts, which is a terrible idea. So a number of shows that I listen to are now like homeless.
Oh, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we recorded CFRU.
Yeah, exactly.
Always have a home here. Listen to CFRU. I just knocked wood, if in case people didn't see.
You're wondering what that weird sound was.
Yeah, it just, you know, the specific things, like the viral videos he does, like the screaming goat and the bee puns, and, you know, knowing how quickly sort of things move, it's curious to think, you know, if you put this movie on, you know, the Disney streaming service, let's say, in 3 or 4 years, and you're watching it, and, you know, you're like, what's this thing with the goat, the screaming, like, who gives a...
But, I mean, even already in the goat thing, right, it's like, the screaming goats have come back, because it was at least 4 years ago, the first goats, and the, like, Miley Cyrus video with goats in it.
Oh, so the internet is cyclical.
Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, I don't even know. Are goats back right now? Or did they just really want to do the goats? So they decided to say, they're back. I feel like it's okay because, yeah, people will, it might not be as on point or on fleek, which is also about 4 years old at that moment. But those videos exist forever. So you can always go back and watch
sure,
it.
Sure. And I wonder if that's not the same argument, too, that, you know, people used to make about video games in general. You know, the video games have struggled for legitimacy as an art form. People still argue, even though this is a business video
game.
Don't
let Bill Maher into this conversation.
Don't let Bill Maher into the conversation. Oh, goodness me. He's still on about comic books. But, you know, video games is a bigger business than the movie industry and the music industry combined. It's... you know, it's been around for almost 40 years now. You know, so things like, I think, you know, looking back 10 years, people, if this had come out 10 years ago, or the original Wreck-It Ralph came out 10 years, people would be like, well, are people still going to remember Zangief? Are still going to be able to be laughing at Zangief gags in 2018 or 2020? And I do wonder if that expectation that, you know, this is... you know, too of the moment. Because I think we're at an interesting moment with the internet because I think a lot of the stuff on the internet is sort of baked in now. Like a lot of the stuff on the internet is probably always going to be part of the internet, like YouTube, like Google.
Comments are the worst. Amazon. That will always be true.
Actually, that does remind me of another thing. Is I wonder if the movie was too up on the internet. Like... you know, because there's that one part where Ralph accidentally reads the comments of the videos And yes, the sort of the matron of BuzzTube, you know, says, oh, never read the comments. But, you know, there's so much to the internet that is profoundly negative, not just like the quote unquote dark web, which is sort of the new boogeyman, but, you know, just like cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, even a place like BuzzTube is probably, right? Because the videos that are uploaded, how many of them are of other people?
Yeah.
Without their consent.
Right.
Who knows what's happening to them?
Yeah. You know, I remember that guy who was the TTC employee who, you know, somebody filmed, you know, sleeping or was, and it turns out that that person was not a well person. Mm-hmm. And so this person, you know, became a symbol of, you know, government bureaucracy and waste and all that. And of course it comes out later, it's like, well, this guy doesn't, you know, his health isn't great. And, you know, we're just sort of mocking him for without a sort of a key piece of information.
Yeah.
And I maybe it wasn't part of the batter in terms of this movie, but there is kind of, it's not necessarily part of the main message of the movie, but, you know, this whole thing with Ralph putting himself out there and doing all these crazy videos, and there is the one acknowledgement that people suck but, you know, there is the blowback of, for the people who put themselves out there and become you know, internet stars or YouTube stars, there is the inevitable blowback, and it's sometimes because they step on it themselves by being human, let's say, or by being in, you know, terrible in their own right, and sometimes because people just like decide to take the piss out of someone because they are on YouTube. And I felt like that was maybe a missed opportunity.
Yeah, but who is this movie targeting?
Right.
Right. And the theme is, as you know, we've already decided that people grow and friends support their other friends in their growth.
Right.
Don't hold them back.
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, I just, you know, growth does not sort of happen with the approval of your friends, right? That there are other people who, you know, will sometimes react poorly to growth, whether that's growth of an individual or growth of, as a society, and then there are sort of reflexive, you know, backlashes to that. And I think in that, you know, you can sort of prepare. This is sort of one way to prepare kids for that. And I think the movie was over. You know, kids already fascinated by computers, and kids, you know, 5-year-olds can type better than I can. But I think there was a way sort of to not just show kids like the internet is awesome and, you know, to grow and to change and to find yourself. These are awesome things to do, and the internet can allow you to do that. But there is also people out there who aren't just going to comment, just going to like, oh, you're stupid. They might actively, you know, lean on you to not change and be your best self, and people who will react badly just to you putting yourself out there because you're putting yourself out there. And I think that maybe have been, I don't know, I'm not sure how.
It's a hard topic to cover, and then a hard topic to have a happy ending with.
Right. And you know, so, this is like 200 level university course stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe it's a bit much to expect Ralph Breaks the Internet to solve all that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Give me a lot to think about.
Well, that's good. If you were a parent, you could then, after the movie, have a continued conversation with your children about the comments section.
And not just give them an iPad.
Right.
Like that other after the credits scene.
Yes.
Which was delightful too. You know, I think the movie, if you know your internet ephemera, there's a lot to enjoy and digest on. Even if you don't, there's a classic sort of cartoon quality where it's just two sort of mismatched characters on an adventure together, Ralph and Vanellope.
Kids, there were lots of kids in the theater, and I didn't hear restlessness in the
theater. No, neither did I. There was no kids getting up to go to the bathroom or anything. It was they were tuned into the screen.
Yeah, it was well done. I liked it. I think it's good for young and old.
Innocent and deeply cynical. All alike. Any final thoughts?
I mean, I think that's it. I was surprised. I was surprised by how much I liked it, and I was surprised by how much more I liked the cheesy parts than I thought I would. And I really want to go home and do some video game car racing.
All right. We'll let you do that. Because we're at the end of the show. That's the end of this edition of End Credits. We hope you liked it, as always. And if you want to listen to it again or listen to any of our past episodes, you can find them on endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find us on social media on Facebook, End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And send us only positive comments, please. Candace, where can people send you positive comments?
You can send all of your positive comments to me anywhere on the internet at sinn48, C-I-N-N-4-8. And if you have negative comments, I guess you can email them and I have a filter to put some right into the, you know, don't read this.
Into the negativity folder?
Yep.
Okay. I'll be back here tomorrow on CFRU for likely more negative things. It's news and politics, open source is Guelph. There was Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits, and we will see you then.